Hey guys, welcome to episode 4 of How to Get Into Investment Banking. And if you're wondering, if you're seeing in the screen recording, you're seeing there's like my camera's actually set up here. I will dive into our topic obviously in a bit, but something I've learned from my time is making short films is that you can never have enough audio sources. And my Shure mic and my amplifier and stuff, some of the audio has been inconsistent. So that's why I have my camera set up here with the DD mic, and I'm like, hey, you need good audio. If people can't understand what you're saying, or not, what's the point of listening to the podcast or watching it online? But getting right to it, again, to all the repeat viewers, thank you so much. I know it means a lot to me. Like I said, I've been dying to put all this stuff out, quite literally for 4 years. So I'm excited to just put this out there. And I feel like there's so many younger students, 17, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, you want to do a lot, have a lot of ambition, and just kind of not knowing what to do. And hopefully if these videos, whether now or today, 5 years from now or after I die, can provide structure, guidance, a little bit of anything to anyone watching, that's all that I can hope. Because I know when I was lost and I was at County College in 19, and I know I wanted to provide for my family and have security and have a job and meaning and purpose, and didn't really have anything to turn to. So I know what that can feel like. I know what that I know what it can be, right? So, with that being said, my little traditional emotional rant at the beginning again, just because I know it's a real journey out there. But anyway, guys, let's get into it. Welcome to this episode of How to Get Into Investment Banking. Today I'm going to be covering a crucial concept, and I know I beat the crap over this drum, which is it's really overlooked, and in my opinion, it really leads to poor career choices being made by students, both in the short and long term. And this is, in my opinion, the single most important framework that you need to apply to yourself in order to position yourself for front office roles, right? Whether it's investment banking, private equity, venture capital, hedge funds, whatever the case is, you need this figured out. And more importantly, as it pertains to your overall journey to get into investment banking. So what's going to happen is after I walk you guys through this concept of PPD that I'm sure people are tired of hearing it, like, Sajan, we've heard you say PPD so many times. Can we just get to it, right? So what's going to happen is that after I walk you through this concept, I'm going to use myself as an example, as a case study to help you understand why you need to start thinking in terms of PPD at all times to ensure that you get into investment banking. And what I mean by this is quite literally, you need to be thinking about PPD in all aspects of your life. You really need to immerse yourself in it. It really needs to become a part and parcel of who you are, right? So getting into it, the first thing is kind of a pain point that I see, and this is a theme that I stress and often will talk about. Man, this is huge. Let me take a step because I really want people to focus. Students often move aimlessly and follow a very disturbing herd mentality that usually goes as follows, right? Is that, hey, I'm going to start here as a summer analyst in investment banking, and then I'm going to go into full-time investment banking. Then I'm going to go into buy side, and then I'm going to get my MBA, and then, oh, greatness, things are going to be cut and dry. And it's startling because it's been like this since I was in college, back in a decade ago, right? Like, it's been like this since then. And what's concerning is that this is not the path, right? Like, this linear path is kind of what everyone reads about on the blogs. And this is like, hey, this is what I want. No matter what, I'm going to stick to this mega fund, bulge bracket, top business school, and my life is going to be set. I'm going to make millions of dollars, and that's it, And the reason this is an issue is because you see countless videos on YouTube. And again, I'm not calling anyone out in particular, but you see so many videos on YouTube, and I understand, and I can, this is not just across the genre of like career coaching. This goes across content makers who make genuine content for any reason. People make content for clicks, right? So you're going to see countless videos on YouTube and corresponding comments, by prospective candidates that go as follows. Hey, what can I do? Mind this handwriting. What can I do for GS banking? You know, what can I do to get into GSIBD? What can I do to get into MS, M&A, right? And it's just like these generic ass questions that go to prove several things, right? First, let me actually just make this a little bit more bigger. Again, sorry guys, totally forgot. Whoever's listening to the podcast, you're probably already subscribed, but if you're not, if you go, either you subscribe or you go on the blog, for this corresponding episode, or you just go on the YouTube link or wherever you watch this, you know, when you get home or get on your phone, just click on the link in the description box and you'll get that PDF emailed to you directly. So you can kind of keep up with me, kind of take your own notes when you guys get home. But I should have mentioned that at the start of the episode, but getting back, to what I was saying is that these are these generic questions that get asked. It proves a few things. And again, to recap, those generic questions are like, hey, I want to work in MSM&A. I want to work at GS, IBD, or I want to work at a mega fund. What it proves to me it proves several things, to me, right? One is that, wow, man, this is huge. One, what it proves to me is that there's a very concerning lack of understanding. And the lack of understanding is that there's a true lack of depth. You know, there's a true lack of meaning behind, you know, what is it that you really want, right? When you ask a generic question like that, and I see a student who reaches out to me and like, hey, Sajan, what should I do? How should I think about things? Right off the bat, it's startling. It's so surface level, right? It's like, hey, where is the thought process? Where is the depth in thinking of what you want to do, in your career? And that's really concerning. Is that, hey, one is that there's a lack of depth in your actions. The second thing is that a lot of people are simply chasing pedigree, the title, the firm, the brand name. And again, look, I'm not saying, I'll be the first one to say, chasing pedigree is not a bad thing, right? Some people, you definitely need pedigree. Perception is huge. And I'm going to talk about all this coming up. But look, pedigree within the right circumstances is not the worst choice. It is important. Yes, you should be chasing the best you can get. I'm not here debating that because I know people like, hey, Sajan, you know, don't contradict yourself or be a hypocrite. Yes, I will say pedigree is the most important thing. But if you're not in a position to chase pedigree, why are you chasing it, right? Again, if you're at a non-target with a 3.0 GPA and you're sitting here writing comments on Wall Street Oasis and like saying you want to work at KKR and you're watching videos on YouTube about, hey, how many hours does a banking analyst make? Or like, hey, how much money am I going to make? Or what's my bonus going to be? It's like, what are you really doing, right? Are you just watching these videos to like fulfill some fantasy to make yourself feel good and then you're going to end up working some crap finance job anyway and not be in banking? So that's where I come from, is like people just think about pedigree and chase it versus actually thinking about like, hey, what sort of pedigree do I want? Why do I want it? And where is that intrinsic motivation coming from, right? And that's the problem, is that you're really relying, I mean, this is huge, right? You're relying on an echo chamber, right? You're relying on an echo chamber of comments from anonymous folks on the internet, which is fine, right? You want to hear what people have to say. And I'm always going to be big on saying, hey, have no ego, no pride. Hear what people have to say. Understand different point of views. But there's a difference between listening to people on blogs and comments and YouTube videos, going in there with the understanding of like, hey, this is a different point of view that I'm just listening to understand, versus critically attacking and dissecting your career plan that's objectively based on what you want to do and with what aligns with your vision. So I'm going to say that again, really clear, and I'm going to write that out because I don't want anyone to miss this. And folks who are listening, I'm erasing the PDF that I'm marking up for you guys because I marked it up quite pretty badly already. But I'm going to say this again, is that you are not, you're not dissecting your career plan. Your career plan is not being critically analyzed by you, right? Because at the end of the day, you know what's best for you. So you're not the one who's objectively thinking about it and saying like, hey, based on my information, what school I go to, my financial situation, how much money I'm making, my passions and interests, and what I want to do, asking other people for advice when they don't fully understand you and what they're doing. And again, what aligns with your vision, right? So again, you're the one who's best positioned to be like, hey, what is it that I want to do? What is my vision? What are my plans? What are my goals? And based on this information, you know, now I can critically plan out a path of attack into investment banking, right? The problem is like, look, there's a ton of great advice out there, but it might be too generic or it might be too specific to a situation that that person is commenting on versus your particular situation. And again, only you are in a position to critically attack and dissect your career path objectively based on what it is that you want to do and what aligns with your vision, right? So again, that's the issue. And what this means is that ultimately, let me just go to this blank page, is that the problem is that you're, again, like I said, you're ultimately relying on other people who don't fully understand you. So they don't fully understand you. Like, right, that's one. So they don't understand you and they don't understand the complexities of your life to help you figure out what you want to do in your career, right? And when I say complexities, what does that include, right? Complexities include your school, your financial situation, your GPA, and school means obviously non-target versus target. They don't understand, hey, why did you make the career moves that you did so far? So example, what's your resi like as a student? And kind of why did you make the choices you did? So they're not in a position to comment on all that, right? So that's why I say is that hey, it's fine to be in a place where you're like, hey, let me see what people are saying and what are some broad generalizations, what are some comments people are making to specific situations, and that stuff can be helpful because you can then tell yourself is that, hey, you know, read about this blog on Wall Street Oasis or watch this video. There's this kid in this background, the situation, and this was like the general advice that people gave him, and this is the specific advice they gave him. Now, what can I take from that? That's all well and good, but you know what often happens is that you kind of just get enamored with like other people's career paths, not realizing that there is a lot of things that had to happen. And that's what I want to stress on this, guys, is that, you know, this is not the answer in terms of this generic path that people dream about. And first of all, nor will you follow that path for the most part. So again, to recap, summer analyst, bulge bracket, mega fund, MBA, greatness, you're going to buy your own island. It doesn't work like that, right? And look, for some people might have a very perfectly aligned career path and it works out great. But for the most part, that's not going to be everyone. And what I'm here to tell you is that it's okay. Things change, variables change, inputs and outputs change into what's coming and going into your life. You're going to grow, you're going to learn, you're going to figure out things that you like, you don't like, passions, interests, all this shit happens. You are human, right? So the best you can do is understand that, hey, everyone is going to have their own unique path that's going to be impacted, and people overlook this as one, your ability and skill, your values, your surroundings, your environment, your timing and luck. So again, I want to repeat that because this is really important, is, and the order of importance can change, but the biggest thing is your environment and your surroundings, obviously your ability and your skill, timing of everything, what your values are, and then ultimately luck, right? I can't stress how important that is because there's so many things that will break your way, don't break your way, and it might happen at different times and you might not just be ready. And that's a really important thing to be mindful of, is that, hey, these factors will impact your career path. So the best thing you can do is like, hey, what's my vision? What is my path? And let me march accordingly the best I possibly can. And then what you can do is you can plan for these variables that come in that you didn't have the foresight to see, right? So again, just to recap, this is that before I actually still haven't even get into how I kind of use PPD, is I just wanted to stress that, look, like, this career path that you see a lot of people chase, it's not for everyone. and it's okay. It's not the end of the world. There are ways where you can kind of enter in at different points, right, through this career path. It doesn't mean you have to start here to ultimately get reach here. You can join in at like different points depending on what roles you start at, when you go to business school, if you don't, if you lateral, whatever the case is, right? There are a lot of ways where you can kind of finagle your way into these different points. So with that being said, let's finally move into how I use PPD or purpose, process, discipline. Just going to drink a little bit of tea right now because I am my throat is completely parched. And I know the folks listening to this on Spotify, just because I'm slurping my tea, this Shure mic definitely picked it up. Because this Cloud Amplifier and Focusrite audio interface, it's fantastic. So apologies in advance for people who are hearing me drink my tea. But, all right, so look, before I get into PPD, I'm going to go into this with the expectation, guys, that all my prior videos have been watched and that you've done your homework assignments. And I think this is crucial because, again, if you do not put in the work, you will not get there. You know, this is not, excuse me, if you have time to go to the bars, go to the pubs, play Fortnite, go on the gram, play 2K, go on Tinder, send DMs, and look, you can put in the time to figure out your why. And again, I don't want to sit here and be some stickler and be like, hey, you can't have fun and, you know, don't go to the football games on Saturdays at Rutgers. But here's a, like, and there are plenty of people who have fun and still achieve career success and get there. But if you're starting from a position where you're not in a position to enjoy what your environment, then don't do it, because then you keep falling behind. So you have to ask yourself, it's like, what is the priority in my life? Is my priority to go watch my college football team play? That's not paying me. I'm not getting anything out of it. You're just going to, like, you know, you have to decide how to spend your time. So it's like, hey, if you need to, you know, buckle down and spend a few weekends getting your shit together, then that's a small price to pay to getting your dream job, right? In investment banking. So, you know, you can spend, the point being is that if you have time to do other stuff, you can make time for your why. And what's really important that I need students to understand is that the cost of you not doing this is as follows, right? You're going to be displaced. You're going to move around like a chicken with your head cut off. And you're going to be looking at your peers in despair because they're getting interviews and offers while you're not. It's that simple, right? So anyway, now this is, excited to get here halfway through the episode of how I use PPD, right? So how I use PPD, here's the first thing. We're going to start with purpose, right? So this is the first thing right here. So I'm going to start right here. So my long-term goal, and again, I want students to understand that it is okay. It is very okay to be a bit vague, especially if you're a junior or senior in high school, you're a freshman, sophomore in college. It's okay to be a bit vague at a young age because look, you're still growing, you're learning, you're getting actual real life experience. So that's fine. But for me, I knew what my long-term goal was, right? I wanted to be an investor, in a variety of ways, right? Again, depending on what roles I got into, what I got exposed to, what opportunities came my way, I was like, hey, this is something that I really want to do, which is that, hey, I want to be an investor, right? So one person that I was really impressed by, and I came across this guy in 2012, there was a conference, a restructuring conference, this guy named Peter Kuno, who, by the way, is single-handedly responsible for Marvel being what it is today. He did sell Spider-Man to Sony. I'm not sure exactly, but and X-Men as well. But Marvel was on the brink of bankruptcy and well, they did have to go through restructurings, but Marvel was done. And Peter single-handedly turned that company around and he was a turnaround guy. And learning about him is what really got me interested in investing initially. I mean, amongst other people's, but I remember reading his story and meeting him in person, and I was like, hey, like, one day, this is something that I'd like to do. It's really cool. It resonates with me. And, you know, being this operational investor, you know, you're going into a company, you know, distressed, buying up, you know, loan-to-own strategies, rolling up my sleeves, driving change the way that he did ahead of an exit or maybe keeping ownership in a company. You know, that seemed very cool to me. And that's just one example of, I mean, there are a plethora of men and women that I looked up to. But that's one long-term vision that I had that I was like, hey, I need to make sure that I make moves that put me in a position to make this actually a possibility. So, like, take the steps to make this long-term vision a reality, right? That was my number one focus, was that, hey, what do I need to do? What do I need to do to get here, right? And I had a few ideas and a few end goals in mind in terms of, like, my career overall, but this was at the forefront. So what I did, again, I started doing my homework. I started digging into the backgrounds of folks in these types of buy-side roles, right? So very common was obviously investment banking, specifically restructuring. Obviously, there were left fin folks, sponsors folks, other coverage product groups, for the, obviously M&A too, but predominantly restructuring, right? So that was it, period. And there, and then there were also, like, tangential folks too who had different backgrounds as well, where it was like your true consulting experience from places like McKinsey's, BCG's, Bain's, or more like corporate restructuring arms at consulting firms. So, like, a lot of folks from Deloitte CRG or their corporate restructuring group, or, you know, more operational turnaround consultant folks, things like A&M, you know, Alvarez and Marcel, Alex Partners, etc. Point being is that I was like, hey, there's a very clear background that I need to even get immersed in this world, learn how deals happen, how do deals come to fruition, and just immerse in, like, that day-to-day work experience of, hey, maybe wanting to be a distressed investor one day. So right away, I was like, hey, I'm going to do whatever I need to in order to best position myself to land a distressed investor role down the line, or be an investor in general, which meant that at this point in my life, right, guys, to be clear, at this point in my life, when I was in college as a freshman, sophomore, in my life, there was one thing that mattered. The only thing that mattered was, like, I'm going to do whatever I need to do in order to position myself to be an investor somehow down the line. So that meant the purpose of my life was to get into investment banking at any cost. I didn't care. This was it. This is all that I cared about. I didn't care about dating. I didn't care about my family. I didn't care about my dog. I didn't care about anything. All I cared was about getting into investment banking. That was the one thing, right? So, you know, something that, you know, obviously one of the homework assignments is, like, hey, really take a step back. So, like, hey, now you have your why, right? You spent your why. You're like, hey, this is the type of front office roles that I'm interested in. Now let's dig a little deeper. Let's look at some of the people that, like, do your homework, do your research, right? Hey, if you're really into consumer retail, right? Let's look about some bigger brands that have gone public recently, right? What, you know, let's look at some other bigger consumer retail companies, Rent the Runway or Olaplex or whatever the case is, right? And then you start thinking through about things like, hey, you know, maybe I really want to be a startup investor. Maybe I want to go work at an incubator. Maybe I want to go join a startup and, like, do strategy and, or I don't know, right? These are the point of these exercises to get born out of this is, one, is you really get that clear purpose, right? And I'm kind of rolling ahead, because what happens is that once you get to this process and this purpose, then everything becomes easy, right? It's just, it's like dominoes. So, you know, again, my purpose was like, hey, I need to get into investment banking in order to make my long-term vision come to fruition. So it's the same thing for you guys, is that, hey, what is that long-term vision? And what is my singular purpose today that I'm going to be maniacally focused on, and the one thing that I'm going to do to get there closer each and every single day? So now we get to the second thing, right? Oh, let me get my pen. So now we get to the second thing, right, is process, right, which is number two. So I knew that if I wanted to be an investor down the line, investment banking was a must. So my purpose was clear, but then I needed to develop a process that I could follow day in and day out to help me achieve that. And something I want to say is that being an athlete really helped. And again, you could do any extracurricular activity that you're really exposed to or love spending time on. But for me, being a discus thrower, playing basketball, all these things greatly helped. I mean, definitely basketball and the team aspect and working with people, greater good, sacrificing, let's get this win. But throwing a discus, I mean, it's a pretty lonely sport, track and field, right? It's mano a mano. It's like either you're better than me or you're not. And we're gonna compete. And it's literally, that's what I loved about track and field and throwing the discus, is that it's mano a mano. It's like, I'm gonna show up, you're gonna show up. If you're a better athlete than me, kudos to you. Congratulations, you beat me fair and square, because we went out, same environment, and you threw further than me, point blank. That means you're a better athlete, better thrower, Doesn't matter. I might think I'm stronger, faster. I may be, but at the end of the day, you are a better thrower because you threw further than me or you sprinted farther than me. So these individual sports, in a way, they did kind of drive that mentality home of like, hey, like, I need to be the best, right? When I go up to an interview, and look, sure, it's different when you join a firm and you're on a team and you're in the bullpen and like great team environment and all that. So I think you can have like a wolf pack mentality of like being a lone wolf, but then also being, hey, we're in a pack together. But the thing I'm trying to stress is that being an athlete does help that mindset of like, hey, what is a singular thing that I need to do each and every single day to have that discipline? So again, you guys are probably reading this on the screen, is that, hey, when I say the discipline, I'll comment to this in a second in terms of like holding myself accountable with like specific targets that I'd set myself. But before I get to that, I want to talk about a little bit about perception, right? So again, I talked about, hey, my purpose is clear and now I need to develop a process that I could follow each and every single day. But before I got to that, I had to realize and understand, and I want students to understand this too. This is very important, especially if like you're wasting time on YouTube videos and comments and you know, chats and stuff, is that what you need to understand is that, yes, to an extent what everyone says is true. Perception is reality. Perception is everything. And that your body of work and your resume, which is what the world sees. Remember, your LinkedIn, your social media, your resume, you, that is what the world sees. And it has to be up to par. So what does that entail, right? What does perception entail, right? So perception entails a few things, right? So one is that you need a top-notch GPA. Like, that is foremost true. You need a top-notch GPA, which is like not even a question. And we'll get into some specifics later, but you need a 3.5, right? Like, period. There is no, sorry, if it's below 3.5, there's gonna be a lot of work that we have to do, right? The second thing is work experience, right? Your body of work, right? So it's like, hey, if you need to work for free, maybe you need to, right? Because you need to bolster your resume, or you need to figure out how to get something on your resume, a case study, campus involvement, whatever. I knew that I would need to work on my story, and it would have to be ironclad and have to be under 60 seconds. I knew that my other behaviorals would have to be on point. And then this is the most important thing, is your technical skill set, right? This is so important, because here's the thing. Wow. You know what, folks who are listening, be glad that you don't have to watch what's on screen, because my handwriting is atrocious. It's really not. It's just this tablet is not working. I trust my handwriting's fine. But work on your technical skill set. And I realize that this is so important, because this is, you know, your technical skill set, it not only is used as a barometer, but it can be used to set you apart, right? Because if everyone gets asked the same technical questions, it allows there to be a baseline and be like, hey, you check the box of knowing this bare minimum that we're asking everyone. So that's why I tell students all the time is that, hey, your technical skill set and prowess is something that you need to spend time on. So for me, I made sure of that. I was like, hey, my technical skill set is really important and I need to work on that. And something I'm going to talk about right now is financial modeling. Briefly, I might do a larger segment on this. I know some people say it's a waste of time when it comes to preparing for technicals. I highly disagree. Now, look, yes, if you're in a time crunch, you don't have time to build an LBO, a full-blown LBO operating model from scratch. But if you're a freshman or a sophomore, you have time. You can make time. You can take a lower class load. You cannot hang out with your friends as much. You have time. Here's what happens, right? Let's just take a full-blown LBO operating model, right? Let's skip the transaction assumptions, right? But what does that entail? Obviously, a full-blown income statement, balance sheet, cash flow statement, the supporting schedules that go with that, right? So you're going to have a working capital schedule. You're going to have a PP&E, CapEx schedule, maybe a detailed depreciation schedule. You're going to have a full-blown debt and interest schedule, cash schedule, and you're going to be linking all that together. And it might take you a few days to just build it from scratch in Excel on your own. And just, you know, it's going to take some time to do it your first time completely blank in a blank piece of Excel. But what does that do, right? If you're building something from scratch like that, you're going to be forced to like, hey, what are the literal line items in each of these statements? intuitively like, hey, how do I build out a PP&E schedule? How do I build out, how does CapEx get affected by this? Where does depreciation impact into this? And then it's like, okay, now you're linking things up in your financial statements. It's like, okay, hey, my working capital schedule links up to my cash flow statement. These changes, now what embeds itself on the balance sheet, right? Okay, cool. I understand that. So to someone to say that financial modeling is a waste of time, I agree it's a waste of time if you don't have time. But if you have time, you learn by doing, you know, you learn by doing, and building financial models is the best way to actually learn finance concepts, because now you're actually using what you read about and be like, okay, hey, this is how these accounting changes work, or this is how these valuations work, and this is how I forecast things, and these are growth rates and revenue drivers, and you actually put it into practice into an Excel model. That's how you learn, right? You learn by doing. So, you know, because listen, I love reading. I love breaking open, you know, and reading about finance and accounting, but the way you do it is applying it, right? Thinking about it, right? Thinking about a company or thinking about a stock or, you know, building a model. And so anyone who says financial modeling is a waste of time, I need more context. And again, in the right situation, I agree it's a waste of time. If you have a week, a month, maybe like 3 months even, it's like, hey, you really can't spend 5 hours or a day or 2 days just like learning how to model from scratch. It's like may not be worth it. Maybe just like, maybe you already look at a completed model to understand how things are flowing, and you can kind of intuitively and conceptually see how things are moving in a real model. But for me personally, the both reading the questions and practicing them verbally, but then also thinking about them conceptually. So looking at companies that I liked and thinking critically, like, okay, hey, this company that I'm looking at, like, what's their working capital situation? Wait, why do they have so much inventory? Like, wait, why is their forecast this much? You know, why are they telling the street for this to be the consensus estimates? Or like, wait, if they issue dividends, like, wait, what does this mean, right? Or why is their valuation being brought down? So again, it's applying what you learn to real life concepts that will put you in a position to answer the questions that people in interviews ask now, right? Because nowadays it's not just as simple as like, walk me through this changing up or down, or the formula for WACC, right? It's intuitive things. It's like, hey, if this company has this enterprise value, we have this EBITDA, and we have this type of margin compression or this type of growth, you know, what sort of expansion can we see? What's realistic, right? Hey, what's going to be the new valuation? Or questions like, hey guys, like top line growth, bottom line impacts or changes, you know, what's going to be more impactful, you know, if we grow volume, if we grow price, what's price elasticity, how does that impact our unit economics? These questions seem daunting as at first, right? But if you're taking the technical stuff you're learning and you apply it to everyday things that you do, because that's what you're spending your time on, right? Is, hey, if you say you want to be an investor, I better not find you wasting your time reading nonsense shit. I better see you reading things on Barron's or Seeking Alpha or reading about companies, listening to earnings calls, right? Be about that life, right? You want to say you want to work in banking, you want to work in private equity, you want to work in hedge funds. Well, actions, you know, you are what you do. So if you don't spend time doing that, you clearly don't want to be in that life, right? So again, you know, actions speak louder than words. So let me recap a little bit, because I went off on a little tangent there, because I think financial modeling is key. But again, I knew that the world would see me, right, for who I am. So perception is everything. So again, top-notch GPA, my work experience, my story, and, you know, kind of other behavioral questions. So 1, 2, 3, 4, technical skill set, down cold, right? Down cold. That's everything, guys. That's accounting. That's valuation. That's M&A, accretion, dilution questions. That's LBOs, paper LBO questions, right? Hey, you're given a set of assumptions like, hey, let's run through an LBO. What do the returns look like? All that stuff down freaking pat, does not matter, right? So what I would do, and again, this is, I kind of extrapolated this when I went on my tangent about financial modeling, is that I would also make sure to read and stay on top of like things that were happening that I claim to be about, right? So like, hey, I read Distressed Debt Investing, right? It's a great blog out there. I read Deal Book. I read Barron's. You know, I read these things, right? To make sure I was on top of like, hey, what are deals that are happening? What are IPOs happening? What are things being priced at? You know, what are some insider trades that are being happening? And again, relax. What I'm saying by that is like, what are executives selling stocks? Why? What are motivations for them? Or trying to look at 13D filings to see like, what are hedge funds doing, right? Reading activist presentations, whatever. Point is that just staying on top of that world, right? Because what does that do? You're reading more, you're getting smarter, you're understanding what are the firms that are working in the space, who are the people. They might have folks that are quoted. You could email them. So again, it's just this big like cycle, right? This virtuous cycle that students don't do. But so again, that's what that allowed me to do. Oh, and the sixth thing that I realized that was important, because perception is everything. Again, guys, and I should really stick to my notes because this was in my notes, is that as I'm doing this and I'm making it a point to stay in tune with what was going on as much as I could, what did that allow me to do? It allowed me to find folks that I wanted to connect with. I would draft emails that I feel like would resonate with them, and I'd reach out to them, right? So that's what I did, and that's what you needed to do, because perception, my friends, is everything. Now, as I kind of clear this this board up, look, everyone knows I went to Middlesex County College, and even though I started out at a county college, I still kept a top-notch GPA because I would need it to transfer. I found internships, even though I worked for free, right? I worked at two wealth management firms for free because I knew if I was transferring into a large state school, be it as a sophomore or junior, then I realized that the competition would be stiff and I'd have to stand out. So I realized that, hey, even though I'm in county college, hey, I'm not going to get these prime on-campus recruiting opportunities, but what can I do? I can work for free. I can do something. I can start a club. I started a finance club at Middlesex County College. Middlesex County College never had a finance club. So I started a finance club. I had two free internships. I had three internships by the time I left County College. By the time I got to Rutgers as a sophomore, I had three internships, two legitimate wealth management internships and a legitimate internship at a metal trading company. They bought physical metal, copper, aluminum, things like that. I had three legitimate internships. And I started my own finance club. So my resume was as beefy as it could be. So now when I joined Rutgers as a sophomore and junior, and I reclassified as a sophomore state because I knew staying for fifth year would be beneficial. Now that I was there as a sophomore, yo, I was running laps around my competition, because now when I was applying for co-ops, co-op is like a 6-month internship. I know there some schools don't have co-op relationships, but regardless, when I was applying for co-ops or internships, people were like, hey, there's a sophomore with three internships, like legitimate work experience. He's been in an office. He knows what to do. He knows how to use Excel. And he has like work examples that he could show us, right? Now that's something I'll speak to too later. So again, instead of thinking about your disabilities and how they're your crutches, you know, not to quote Drake off of Certified Lover Boy, but you know, like think about how those disabilities can give you your abilities, right? So sorry, if anyone is listening this far into the podcast and you hear this CLB reference, the first person to comment on this video saying, hey, Sajan, I got that Certified Lover Boy reference and you know what song it's from, and quote, you know, comment the actual lyric. The first person to comment in general, so whether you're the first person to comment on YouTube or Instagram or wherever, I will Venmo you. I'm on camera. I will Venmo you $100 if you're the first person to comment they got the reference and where this reference is from. So yeah, so that's really important. But just to give you an example, is that even though I was at County College, guys, and I knew how important perception was, I continued to network with peers, whether they were at Middlesex and they had transferred to other schools. The great thing about Middlesex is that, or County College in general, not everyone goes to the state school. I have a lot of folks who went to University of Minnesota, Virginia Tech, UVA, MIT, obviously Rutgers, NJIT, etc. Some people went to UCLA. Some people went to McCombs, you know. Some people went to William & Mary. Some people went to Emory, right? Some people went to Middlebury, Hamilton, etc. So I stayed in touch with all these folks who I went to County College with, who went to different schools. But another thing I did, just to really let y'all know how real the thirst is and how real the thirst needs to be, is when I was at Middlesex County College before I transferred to Rutgers, I was cold emailing students at Rutgers. I'm not even lying. I'll have to pull up the receipts. And this was like Facebook messages. And what I would do, because I knew I was going to Rutgers, I remember I emailed or I messaged the folks on the board of LIBOR at the time. I don't want to say their names because I don't know if they'd be cool with it, but really impactful my life. And I messaged them and I was like, hey guys, I'm currently a student at Middlesex. I'm transferring to Rutgers, really interested in a career in finance, particularly investment banking. Would love to swing by your meetings just to kind of have a head start. They were just like, yeah, dude, like that's amazing. I went to LIBOR meetings when I wasn't even at Rutgers in 2011, just because I wanted to know what it was. And I cold emailed students on the board of LIBOR when I was at Middlesex. So again, remembering nothing is beneath you. If you want something, go get it. Perception is everything. And you need that work experience. You need the top GPA. You need the technical skill set. You need the story. You need to be educated. And you need to put in that effort, and people see that, right? You know, there are a few folks, and again, I'll make sure I get they're okay with me saying their names, and I'll maybe say it in the next episode. But there were a few folks, you know, they were like, holy shit, like Sajan is coming to every goddamn meeting. He's going above and beyond, doing everything he can. He already has like 3 legitimate internships. He's like already meeting people. He's like past the technicals. Like, I can help him. I want to help him. Like, I want to, this is someone I want in my circle, right? So your effort, it can be contagious. It can rub off on people, and people will pick up on that. So that's also important. So now going to this other part of this discipline, and kind of how did I hold myself accountable? How did I hold myself accountable, and what were these targets that I speak of? So when I say discipline, and you have to hold yourself accountable, what I mean is that you are your own coach, right? You have to be objective with your results or lack of them if nothing is happening, and then you have to reassess. And you have to carve out time to do this every week. So what does this mean? And this is when I just keep hitting my head on the Shure mic. I gotta adjust this when I look down. But what does this mean, right? Is that you need to carve out time to work on this each and every week. And what this means for myself is this is how I would try to schedule my days, is I would try to generally schedule calls and informational interviews on Wednesday and Thursday. Thursdays and Fridays, great. Just people, things are a little bit slower. Fridays are usually quieter for most folks. And I would carve out time every Saturday morning to spend time reading Barron's or Deal Book or looking through an activist presentation, reading Seeking Alpha, something that would help me learn and grow as it related to my passion and my field of interest. And then on Sunday, I'll spend that time drafting cold emails, period. Like, that is what I did, right? In addition, obviously, some of this other stuff are like prepping for behaviorals and technicals and, you know, other stuff on an ad hoc basis. But I would spend time drafting emails Sunday. I would review them on Monday, and then I would send them out either on, you know, Monday or Tuesday or maybe even Wednesday to try to schedule calls for the following week. So it just becomes like this iterative cycle of, hey, you're just kind of sending out emails in advance in anticipation of next week, right? To get ready for interviews and informational interviews, one-on-ones, coffee chats, whatever. And this is how my weeks were structured in college, right? Obviously, depending on the time of year or what else was going on, you know, you have finals or things come up. But the point is that as a prospective candidate, you need to set aside time to do these things, right? Otherwise, they will not get done. And, you know, that's like the great thing about having this PPD mindset, and maybe I should have a little box in the middle, is that if you attack everything you do with PPD, you will have a purpose in your life. And with a purpose in your life, guys, you will then be like, hey, I have a purpose and I want this, which will force you then to have a process in place to follow to achieve your purpose, right? So if these things are true, you're going to maintain the discipline to actually execute. So what this means is, like, I'll give an example of myself. It's like, hey, I wanted to train for the Olympics. I'm a discus thrower. I had a sole purpose. I want to throw X amount of feet, 190 feet, and I want to qualify for the Olympic trials. So I had a process in place. It's like, hey, I went to bed at 10 p.m. woke up at 4 a.m., did my yoga, dynamic mobility, stretching, some Pilates, bear classes, etc. Got my body right. I had my morning workouts, core conditioning. I threw in the afternoons. Did technical work, and then at night did some more core conditioning or some recovery work, Normatec pool, hot tub, jacuzzi, etc., or other things like that, right? I had a sprint coach. I had a performance coach. I had a nutritionist. I had a lifting coach. I had a throwing coach. I had coaches. I literally had I had like 3 throwing coaches. I had 2 coaches. Well, I had 2 coaches I'd see in person. One was virtual because he was out in Arizona. So I had 3 throwing coaches. I had 1 lifting coach, like strictly lifting. It's 4. Fifth, I had a nutritionist, I had a chiropractor, I had a dedicated PT person, I had a dedicated orthopedist that I went to. That's 8 right now, right? And then I had a dedicated performance coach whose job was just to like, hey, what do we do to make sure you keep performing so you can train 6-8 hours a day? And then my 10th, I had a sprint coach just because, like, specifically dedicated to, hey, how do you become more explosive? I had 10 coaches, right? A little excessive, but hey, if I was like, hey, I want to be a world-class athlete to throw a discus 190, 200 plus feet, 60 plus meters, hey, I need that process in place. I needed my regiment, right? And then I need that discipline to maintain that. So, hey, I had the strict training schedule. I had the strict training blocks. Nothing else mattered. It's like you don't do anything unless you do your required training. So same thing as it applies to investment banking. Another example of when I was in college and students that I work with is that, hey, your purpose is to get a job in investment banking because of, you know, X, Y, and Z reasons. So we're going to have a process in place. So what does that process look like for you, right? Depending on where you're starting from, that process is different from everyone, right? So for example, is that you know that like nothing else matters other than your purpose. So your process is going to be aligned with that. So that means is that, hey, maybe you're starting at accounting college or a non-target. Maybe you have a good GPA or bad GPA. But the point is depending on what your starting point is that your process is going to be, it's going to be adjusted to that reality. So for me, hey, I was at accounting college. I knew that I needed a good GPA so I could transfer to a good state school. I knew that I needed a good body of work because I wanted to be a competitive student when I got to Rutgers, because I knew I needed to stand out. When I got to Rutgers, hey, I was like, I need to get involved on campus and start networking with students who have already gone internships or are getting internships, right? So I can understand what's the environment, what does recruiting look like out of Rutgers, who are the alumni. And again, my process was constantly evolving. Now, what allowed that process to be continual and allowed me to execute, because execution is important, is I had that discipline in place, right? I was like, hey, nothing else mattered. I had my purpose in mind to get into investment banking so my long-term vision of being an investor could be achieved. So I had that process in place, which I relentlessly followed. And again, I had the internal fortitude to maintain that discipline and execute every day and every week until I achieved my goal. So that's why that discipline is really important, right? Is like, hey, have that strict bedtime, have time blocks allotted and blocked out. Like, hey, this is when I'm going to do this no matter what, come hell or high water. And that's the type of discipline that's going to serve you well later on in life as well. Now, I know this episode has gone on much longer. I might even cut this into two because this is a very lengthy episode. But something that I want to touch on is the mindset that my CEO at my old firm, Star Mountain, had, Brett Hickey. And it was crazy because at the time, I didn't really appreciate why he was like this, but he was always so maniacally laser focused. And like, man, Brett, like, you know, let's take a step back for a second. But the advice I got from him that, you know, I wish I had. So let me clarify. I got the advice from him 6 years ago, 5 years ago, but I didn't start applying it till later. So there's a difference between getting advice and when you actually apply the advice, right? So for me, he was like, Sajan, whatever I'm going to do, I have to ask myself, will this get me one step closer to my goal or not, period? And sometimes people might get rubbed the wrong way if you act like this in your life. But this is another thing. And again, I mentioned this in another podcast. My girlfriend said this to me recently. She's like, Sajan, are you worried about your actions letting others down? Are you more worried about your actions letting other people down or letting yourself down? I was like, damn, that hit home, baby girl. That I was like, Star Girl, that hit home. And that's true, is that you need to realize is that are my actions going to let myself down or others down? And what's more important, right? And it's okay. Look, people are going to get rubbed the wrong way, and that's fine. But you can't let that get in the way of your goals and happiness. So again, before you do anything, any action that you do, you have to ask yourself, is that, you know, is this going to get me one step closer to my goal? You know, period. That is all that matters, right? So look, guys, this was a very I'm at 50 minutes right now. So what I'm going to do is I'll just cut this episode in two, and wherever I decide to cut it, I'll find it and, just add something on at the end, just so people kind of, I want to make sure people go through this. Really important is that, you know, if you need to go back and you need to listen how I use this idea and concept of PPD as a college student to ensure how I got into investment banking and how you can do the same, go and do that, right? But it's really important to do this stuff when you have the time to do it and to build a foundation, right? And not to get distracted by the noise that is out there. So look, guys, this is what I want you to do for this week. You know, this is going to help you get into investment banking. This is like literally what I want to do. This is the homework, right? It's one. Actually, let me erase this real quick. Okay, cool. So what I want you to do is the first thing is I'll get this right one day. What is your purpose, right? Write this out and start working on it, because you can, you know, only you can say is that like, hey, you know, I don't need to worry about this for so long, and you know, this is fine. Like, I don't need to think about this. Look, at some point, you need to have conviction and make a stand and decide that, hey, like, this is what I am interested in, XYZ. These are some potential long-term careers that really resonate with me. And you need to do that, right? At some point, you can't just be, you know, floating in space, like, right? You really need to do this at some point. Second thing is your process, right? Figure out what are the 3 to 5 things you need to work on each week to get into investment banking. Now, look, 3 to 5 things sounds like a lot, but guess what? When you have a large goal and you break it down into small pieces, you know, it becomes very easy. It's kind of like the Russian dolls, right? You kind of, you open one and it keeps getting smaller and smaller. So let's focus on one thing at a time. So what are your weaknesses and your strengths? And this is not some interview question. This is a genuine thing of like, hey, how is your candidacy perceived? So for instance, if you need to transfer or you have a poor GPA and these are some of your largest hurdles, then let's take a step back and figure out how to beef up that GPA. Do we take easier classes? Do we spread our classes out? Right? Do you have next to no experience on your resume? What do we do about that? Is there any way you could work for free? Is there any way you could volunteer? What can you do, right? Is there any way you could get involved on campus, you know, join a finance club or start something? What can we do to bolster your candidacy and the perception, right? And then the last thing is discipline, is make your schedule. And this is important. It's going to take some time, right? I didn't get here by not doing this, right? Make your schedule. Track yourself, see how often you're sticking to your processes, right? Hey, are you allotting time to draft emails on the weekends? Are you allotting time to read about deals and things that are happening and developing your technical fortitude and skill set? Are you actually doing these things, right? If you are not, then figure out why, isolate the problem or issue that is happening the most frequently and attack that. So in supply chain, this is known as a Kaizen method, which is like, let's look at the issue that's occurring most frequently, the most degree of frequency, and then let's isolate that problem and attack that. So again, as you develop your schedule, it's like, hey, this is what I'm going to be doing Monday to Tuesday, Wednesday through Thursday. I have class, I have these clubs, you know, working for free, developing my technicals, drafting emails, reading, whatever. Let's build that process. Let's build that foundation. And then really figure out where you're spending your time not being productive, and let's change that. Right. And then that's going to help you, you know, that's going to help you immensely. And that's the hardest thing, right? Is that have the discipline to actually have that schedule, track your time, and do all this, right? So again, look, guys, load of stuff. I feel bad. I had a few questions people sent to me. I will just get to that later because we're at 50 minutes. So I do want to wrap this up because I know people are busy. And again, you guys need to be out there drafting emails now, right? Get PPD, get on it. But so look, let me know what folks' PPDs are, what your purpose is, what your process is, discipline, and how you plan on attacking it. And again, any questions, comments, type them out below, email me. And as always, if you want to schedule some time to speak one-on-one, peep my calendar, there's a link. Let's talk, 15 minutes. Let's get on the phone and let's see what I can do to help. Anyway, next episode, I will be walking you guys through how to structure your PPD. And I'm going to be using the backgrounds of one of the students who I've coached in the past as a, as an example, who goes to a non-target, and we'll go from there. But again, guys, thank you for sticking through the whole episode. I know this is a lot. Make sure you download the PDF, do the homework, figure out your PPD, and let's get you in investment banking, you know, one step closer. All right, guys, till next week. Take care.